It's a very holy day. There's a tradition that it's a very mystical day. And it says in the Ramah, this very fascinating thing that on Hashanah Rabbah, a person should go outside at night in the evening, and he should see if he can see his shade from the moonlight. You stand out in the open. Today it's probably impossible to do this because we live in New York City and there are, Baruch Hashem, a lot of lights, street lights, home lights. But in the olden days, you go out in the middle of the night and there's no illumination. Hashanah Rabbah was already, Hashanah Rabbah, what's the day of Hashanah? The 20th day of the month? So the 20th day of the month already, the moon is on its way, it's on its way down, but it's still, the moon is pretty big. There's plenty of moonlight on the 20th day of the month, and you go outside and you look at your shadow. And if you can see, now I don't remember the exact words, but there's a technique to look at your shadow. If you can see, I think maybe you have to look for the shadow of your shadow, I don't remember. That means it's a good sign, you're going to have a good year. And if chas v'shalom, you don't see your shadow in the moonlight, you should go home and put your home in order. It means, rachmana litzlan, the year is not going to go your way. And all of the poskim tell us, don't dare try this at home, because this doesn't mean anything to us. We don't know what these words of Chazal mean. These are mystical things, and but yet you see even in the Ramah, that the Ramah mentions that in Hashanah Rabbah, it's a day where the Sifrei Chaim and the Sifrei Mesim are psuchim. What is interesting though is that nowhere in the Talmud Bavli or the Talmud Yerushalmi is there any mention whatsoever, any remez whatsoever that on Hashanah Rabbah there is any semblance of din. Doesn't say this anywhere, that there's any din. It's a spooky day. It's just a regular day. It's Chol HaMoed. It's the seventh day of Chol HaMoed. This is something which has been revealed to us by Sifrei Kabbalah. And today, in the 21st century, it's very popular. It's something very popular. Hashanah Rabbah, you know, depends which circles we hang out, is a very, very big deal. Okay, I'm not here to toot anyone's horn. I'm not a big fan, whatever. But I one of the things that I learned, I spent many, many years in Chaim Berlin, and I can tell you that Chaim Berlin, the Hashanah Rabbah, is really magnificent. It's really a magnificent davening. I don't know what they're gonna do this year. They're probably for sure gonna have two minyanim. I really don't know what they're gonna do. I have no clue what they're gonna do. They're probably themselves scratching their heads what they're gonna do. But in the past, Hashanah Rabbah was packed. Packed. Like mamash, body on body. And they have a magnificent davening. They finish davening probably close to 12 o'clock. They start at 8 o'clock. And davening ends at 12 o'clock. And it's a whole show. It's mamash a show. And women come. The women section is full. And it's really magnificent. And the people who really, even afterwards, they go home, they have a suud, a siyamtif. It's a very holy day. And, you know, some places, unfortunately, they just, you know, patch it up, 1, 2, 3, you walk around 7 times, you finish. But it appears to be, from the Hasidic Sfarim, a very holy day. And there's a very big mystery as to if it's really such a holy day. And if these Sifrei Kabbalah and these Sfarim from the Hasidic world are really correct, and it's been accepted all over that we take it very, very seriously, why then does it not have any mention of this anywhere in the Talmud Bavli? So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says something very, very fascinating, and he says that in time of Chazal, this is what he says. I mean, I'll read it to you. It's such a shocking thing. It's a shocking thing to say this, but in the time of Chazal, people took the Yom HaDin very, very seriously. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, people really, really saw in front of them Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Mesim, and it was a very frightening time. If Chazal would have revealed that Hashanah Rabbah is a Yom HaDin it would have taken away from the Simchas Yom Tov. It would have denied people the ability to truly celebrate the day as it deserves. So they deliberately did not reveal that in Shomayim, in the Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Mesim are open, in order not to detract from the element of Yom Tov of the day. Now today, in our day and age, and even going back, let's say 500 years ago, no one's afraid of Yom HaDin. On Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you don't see people walking around in a state of pachad, of who knows what's going to be. The Emes HaDin has been, unfortunately, we are desensitized to the Emes HaDin. Thus, it's no big deal if Chazal revealed to us that Hoshana Rabbah is also a day of din. Now, I know this is very shocking to say such things. I'll even read you what it says over here. Because these are really shocking things. Look, let me read you what it says over here. Omnam. Maybe I should put this on the screen. I'll read it with you. Problem is, the time I get this to work on the screen will take forever. I should have done this in advance. It would be a good thing to read to you. Let me just read it to you. We'll see if I can, while I'm talking, I can... Well, maybe I can get it to work. Let's see. Let me see if I can sign in to start. At least there's no capture code today. Okay, Omnam, I'll start reading. Omnam b'shas lemuva hachoymer shel hayoim sheze yom chitum hadin l'chol ha'olam. Nowhere in the Talmud. Okay, we got it here. Let me put it on the screen. Okay, I'll put it on the screen. I can read it with you. It's something really, really, really fascinating. Really fascinating to see. Okay, this is really, really good stuff. Omnam b'shas, okay? Omnam, however, b'shas, which means in the Talmud, loimuva hachoymer shel hayoim. Nowhere does it say the severity of what this day is all about. Sheze yoim chitum hadin l'chol ha'olam. That this day, Hoshana Rabbah, is when the seal of judgment is applied to the entire world. Vahave kima'at, it's just a little bit less osa choymer, with the same intensity, stringency, severity, kimo rosh hashana v'yoy makipurim. Aval hisber ezem maran, so why not? How come the Gemara, if it's really true what the Hasidim have taught us, what I guess that they're drawing from the Zohar, so how come no, it doesn't say this anywhere? Where do they get this from? Aval hisber ezem maran hagoin Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky besifroi emes liyakov al hatoyra and parshas emor the chachme Yisrael, the people who wrote the Gemara, the Tanoim, the Amoraim, hivinu, they understood shebeim yifarsimu, if they would reveal in the Gemara sheze yoim hadin shall call echod v'yechod, that today on Hashanah, Rabbah, every single person, it's his day of judgment. V'sha'asidoi shall Hashanah haba, and what will happen in the coming year depends, toluy depends, b'yoyim ha'godol hazeh. You know what's going to happen? Yitordu ha'moinim, the multitudes, the masses, the common man will be terrified. They will be in a state of shock, a state of fear. They'll be busy, but in this context, it means they're going to be very uncomfortable. V'tispatel al yidei ze simchas hachag, and by knowing that today is the Yom Hadin, they're not going to celebrate. They're And that's not a good thing. Chazal felt that it's extremely important on this day, Hoshana Rabbah, it's Yom Tov, you are obligated to celebrate. I guess also, if you're not going to celebrate on Hoshana Rabbah, you're not going to prepare properly for Simchas Torah, for Shemini Atzeres, and that is not a good thing. And therefore, Ulechein, therefore, Mosru Ezeh Rak Lachasidim V'Anshei Maisa. They only reveal this secret to unique and select people. V'Halalu, and indeed these people, Hoyu Markidin B'Simchas Beis HaShoeva, they knew that their life is on the line, and yet they would go to the Beis HaMikdash, or I guess wherever they were, and they would rejoice in the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, Afal Pi Sheyodu, as Tiv Hayom, even though they knew that today their life is on the line. Can you imagine a person has a relative who's having open heart surgery, who's having brain surgery, who's having something where literally the doctors say we do not know if he's going to wake up. So what do you do on that day? When you go to a baseball game, on that day you go and you go to a restaurant. On a day when Rachman Lissan, a person has a relative that's in a very grave situation, you're just not in the mood. You just sit home and you do nothing. You look at the walls, you learn Tehillim, whatever you're going to do, but you're not running for looking for entertainment on a day when someone you know you're close with is going through trauma. And when it comes to yourself, it's no different. Therefore, yet, people, the tzaddikim, they were complex people, they were able on the one hand to rejoice because it is, after all, Yom Tov. It is Yom Tov, a big person is making a wedding for a child. So the child needs the parent to be there at the wedding to rejoice with the child. But on the other hand, the parent has something on his head that terrifies him. He has information about something that completely terrifies him. So you got to be a gibor, a mighty person, to put on a good show, to dance with your child, go to the wedding, and make believe you have no daiga in the world, and smile and say mazel tov, and yet while you still feel on your head the intensity of what's really going on. Not everyone is cut out for that. Only the chassidim, the anshei ma'aseh, v'halalo hoyim rakti b'simchas b'shoeva, api shoyodu yostev hayom kamo shemevi hamailos hasulam shrabenu hagrua. Okay, the gra, he has a sefer called the sulam, a ladder. It's a kabbalistic sefer, and there he explains there kiyem simchas beis hashoeva gam b'leil hashana rabba. The gra was able. He was from those select people. Now here comes the real fascinating part of what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says. So why today is it different? So the answer is because Avol bat b'doyres u'acharonim, in the later generations, shekvar ro chachmei hador, the wise men of the generation have seen, they see clearly, sha'af sheyedu hatzibur shezeh yoyim hadin. You can tell people the whole day, do you know that today is the yoyim hadin? Today your life is on the line? And they look at you and they say, okay, thank you very much for the information. What's for breakfast? We live today in a world where nothing shakes us up. That's the way we are today. Therefore, if people know that today is the Yom HaDin, ze lo yafriya, it does not take away l'simcha sachak shalohem, after davening on Hoshana Rabbah, you'll go into the sukkah, someone will offer you a lechayim. You have no one today has any hesitation of eating and drinking and dancing and being happy and merry, even though everyone knows good and well that on this day, it's like Yom Kippur, and the Sifrei Chayim and the Sifrei Mesim are open. And that's why, since no one's terrified, you might as well have a good time. You might as well tell you the truth. We will tell you the truth, and you can deal with it. You can have both, whatever. That's why the last line, Zelo Yafril Simcha Sachag Shalachem Bnei She'ein Emas Adin Meruba Kol Kach. No one's afraid of din today, unfortunately. Lekach Gili Es HaEmes. They reveal the truth. Al Yidei HaZoyar HaKadosh V'Harizal. Okay, so that is I think these few lines here and this sefer, by the way, I believe that this sefer is probably the best sefer that I have. It's called Simchas HaMo'adim. There are three volumes, one on the Mo'adim, one on Tefillah, and one on Shabbos. And the Mechaber of the Sefer knows how to write, and he knows what to write about. And he also launched this wild FBI, CIA, NSA, MI6 investigation on all of the Gedolei Yisrael, and he tells you exactly what they did. So if you want to see halacha l'maisa what they did, he'll tell you Rav Moshe did this, Rav Rudiman did this, Rav Shach did this, the Brisker Rav did this, and this Rebbe did this, all the biggest Gedolei HaPoiskim did this. It's a little bit funny to me, because there is one person that he quotes very often, and he tells you what his minhagim are, and I know, I can't tell you I know 100%, but I know 95%. This person is a very big person, he's a very holy person, but he's not a Baal Halacha. He's not known to be a person of a master in Halacha, and whatever he does because everyone else does it, because that's what his father did, or that's what they tell him to do. And I just find it very funny how he quotes him, and he tells you, this is what he does. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. I also do things, big deal, who cares what I do. When you tell me that Rav Moshe did something, you tell me that Rav Yeshua Ber Soloveitchik did something, you tell me that the Brisker Rav did something, oh, that resonates with me, because these are people that were Balei Halacha, and they everything that they did was with clear understanding of what the halacha is. But you tell me about a big rebbe, a great rebbe who's a very, very holy person, don't get me wrong, very, very holy person, you tell me what his customs were, I know this person pretty well. I mean, I know that very well, but I know enough about him that I'm comfortable. He does things because whatever, because that's what everyone else does. But yet, put that aside. The Sefer is awesome, and these few lines here really to me open up a world of understanding insight just in general about Hashanah Rabbah, about Chazal, about the Emes Hadin, about our generation, and about how times change. And when times change, it's necessary to change with the times. And our minhagim, the things that we do on Hashanah Rabbah, they did not do 500 years ago. Go back 500 years ago, didn't do any of this. Hashanah Rabbah was understood in the Chol Hamoed. Today Hashanah Rabbah, Baruch Hashem, became a very beautiful Yom Tov. It became a very significant Yom Tov. A lot of very interesting things that we do on Hashanah Rabbah. And this all ties into a revelation which doesn't say anywhere in the Gemara, but it was passed down from one generation to the next. And today it's been expanded upon and exploited, the intensity of what Hashanah Rabbah is all about. Okay, let me just run through these, some of the minhagim, some of the very interesting things in Hashanah Rabbah, time permitting. I'm not going to keep you here too long. Let's talk about some of the things that we do in Hashanah Rabbah. First of all, at night. At night, Hashanah Rabbah, by the way, is the Ushpizin of David HaMelech. We'll talk about that at the end, a little drush. There are seven Ushpizin, and the last day is the Ushpizin of David HaMelech. Therefore, a lot of things that we do in Hashanah Rabbah relate to David HaMelech. The first thing is, Hashanah Rabbah at night, there is a minuk to lain Mishnah Torah. This really is a controversial minuk. It's not at all simple. The Hasidim, it's a Hasidish minuk. What's the reason to lay in Mishnah Torah? Musar. Basically, it comes from the, almost everything about Hashanah Rabbah, everything, it comes from the Arizal. Rabbi Chaim Vital, he writes from the Arizal. I'll show you, everything is from the Arizal. And one of the minhagim is to lay in the only Chumash Devarim. Why? Because Chumash Devarim is Musa. Elah had Devarim Asher Dibur Moshe El Kol Yisrael. Before Moshe died, He gave them Musar. And it's very appropriate to absorb the Musar of Moshe Rabbeinu on the Yom HaDin. It's a Yom HaDin, and what better Musar can you hear than to listen to the words of Moshe Rabbeinu giving Musar to Klal Yisrael moments before he died, the period right before he died. It's a Musar Shmuz. It's not a happy event. Going to Mishneh Torah is not there's no music. It's a Musar Shmuz to prepare for the Yom HaDin. Now, it's a controversial minhag because the minhag is to take out a Sefer Torah and to lain from the Chumash Devarim, but generally in Halacha, you're not allowed to lain a Sefer Torah Barabim without a bracha. So if you're taking out a Sefer Torah to lain, to read from it, that demands that you make a bracha. Asher bocha arbonu mikol, asher bocha arbonu mikol, they call her Amim v'nasam lanu es tarasay, to make the regular, and then the bracha acharayin, the bracha rishayna, the bracha acharayin, the classic brachas you make when you get an aliyah. But you can't do that. Number one, because it's nighttime, and there's generally no kriya sator at night, and Chazal nowhere in Shulchan Aruch or in the Gemara did Chazal ever sanction to make brachos on a Sefer Torah on a Shana Rabbah at night to lay Mishneh Torah. Okay, so don't make a bracha. You can't do that. If you're taking out a Sefer Torah, you have to make a bracha. And you can't make a bracha. So you really are stuck in the middle. So what's the answer? We're not taking out the Sefer Torah to lain as a Kriyas HaTorah. We're taking out the Sefer Torah to learn. Musar. That's the answer. That is the answer that why a very, very large number of people, many shuls, not everyone, many shuls who do have Mishneh Torah, very few people come to them. Very few people really have the patience to sit and listen to Mishneh Torah. Mishneh Torah takes about an hour and a half. Between an hour and a half to 2 hours. I know you'll tell me there are certain people, Speedy Gonzalez people, who can do it in an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 15 minutes, do it in an hour. They have special talent. They can get the words out of the mouth. Okay, very good. Good for them. They shave down 15 minutes. But you can't do Mishneh Torah less than at least an hour and 15 minutes. I don't think it's possible. Less than an hour and 15 minutes. And some places, unfortunately, some places they only can get people that can't go so quickly. And it can take even an hour and a half. And it can take even 2 hours. You know, it depends whatever the situation is. So many people don't have the patience. So they come for part of it, they come at the end, they come in the middle, they come and they go. It's very hard for most people today to have the stamina to sit and listen to Mishneh Torah. So many people don't participate. But those who participate, they avoid the question, the halachic question of being a bracha by claiming that we're only laning as limud, like learning. It's not a din of kriyas. It's not a din of Kriyas HaTorah. However, the Litvaks, they hold that it's osur. They mamish hold that it's forbidden to lain Mishneh Torah, to take out the Sefer Torah and to read it. And they don't do it. They hold it shloi kedin. Okay, but today everyone's really a chassid. Today there's no such thing anymore as pure Litvaks. There's no pure chassidim. You're not going to find a Litvaks objecting. In fact, there are many Litvish shuls today that also lain Mishneh Torah. The more the merrier. We live in a very different type of world today. Okay, the next minhag is to say Tehillim. Being that Hashanah Rabbah is the... Okay, I want to just close the door. Okay, there's some noise here that's disturbing me. Give me one moment, please. Okay, I'll be back in one moment.
Rabbeinu, how are you? Good morning. Will you keep that closed door?
No, I
didn't
do like that.
What? I won't do that. I'll keep it open.
Okay, so please.
I'm not
watching.
All right, I'm back. Okay, so going back to David HaMelech, it's the Ushpizen of David HaMelech, therefore there are people who recite the entire Tehillim in the Sukkah as a way, it's Yom HaDin. So Tehillim is always very good, and David HaMelech, David composed Tehillim, therefore it's a very appropriate time to recite Tehillim. Okay, the next minhag of Hashanah Rabbah is the rings on your lulav. Let's first talk about Hashanah. So we know that we go around seven times. Instead of going around one time around the bima, we go around the bima seven times. Why seven times? Zecher. First of all, this was a minhag that was done in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, they would go around the bima, around the mizbeach, and the Beis HaMikdash in Chol HaMoed every day one time. And on Hashanah Rabbah, they circled the mizbeach seven times. The way they circled the mizbeach is not the way we circle the bima. They circled the mizbeach with an arava. We circle the bima with our dalid minim. We don't circle, no one goes around the bima with aravas. We go around with the dalid minim, which is not the way it was done in the Beis HaMikdash, but it's a zecher. It's a zecher l'mikdash, the way it was done in the Beis HaMikdash. So they went around seven times. So we go around on Hashanah Rabbah seven times. I believe the Gemara says the reason why they went around seven times is zecher l'yirichoy. When they entered into Eretz Yisrael, they walked around Yericho seven times, and miraculously the walls of Yericho collapsed. They sunk into the ground. So just like in Yericho, they walked around the walls of Yericho. So that teaches us, in essence, is that what we do in Hashanah Rabbah takes us, connects us to coming into Eretz Yisrael. Hashanah Rabbah obviously has a lot to do with our conquest of Eretz Yisrael, our renewal, our commitment to renew our relationship with Eretz Yisrael. What greater proof can there possibly be than this inyan of walking around the bima seven times, which corresponds to Klal Yisrael circling the city of Yericho seven times when they entered into Eretz Yisrael? So in essence, Hashanah Rabbah is Yom Atzmaut. Okay, that's the real Yom Atzmaut is Hashanah Rabbah. And what is the real Yom Yerushalayim? The real Yom Yerushalayim is Shushan Purim. I always say these are the real, all these new holidays we have today, these are not new holidays, these are old holidays. They just somehow they got lost. If you're walking around the bima seven times because you're coming into Eretz Yisrael, it's your renewal. It's the renewal of your connection. That's what Hashanah Rabbah is. Okay, now the next thing. Therefore, we see that it's a connection to Eretz Yisrael. So far, we have the Musar of Moshe Rabbeinu. We have the Musar of David HaMelech of Tehillim. We have a connection to Eretz Yisrael. Then there's a very interesting minhag. I don't know if you do. Is to take off the rings from your lulav. On your lulav you purchased, that you set up, you probably put on your lulav how many rings? Some people put on two rings, some put three rings. The minhag is on Hashanah Rabbah to take off the rings. You just hold in your hand the lulav with the hadas and the arevos and no rings. Why? So the remez is, it says in the pasuk, Kapois or lekachtem lchem bayim harishon, kapois term, pre-ate, there's a vav that connects all of the minim together. Kapoi pre-ate sadar, kapois tamarim, va'anaf eats of us, ve'arve nochal. The vav connects, that vav we learned of eget. You have to hold in your hand together the lulav, the lulav with the hadasim and the aravos. Being that the source of Eged is the Vav, the Vav is six, that reveals, is what it says in Chazal, that the Eged is only done 6 days, not 7 days. 6 days of Sukkot and not 7 days. So the seventh day there is no connection. You don't have the Vav. You don't have that bond which keeps it all tied together. something along those lines. I don't know the exact details, but there is this custom. That's one reason. Another reason is that we want you to be able to wave your lulav violently on Hoshana Rabbah, since it's your last chance to wave the lulav in order to bring blessing into your life and to ward off evil decrees or anything, winds that are not pleasant or anything that is no good. We want the lulav to wave, to shake. In order to do that, we take off the rings. Now, here's a very, very big debate. When do you take off the rings? There are many, many minhagim. He has here an FBI investigation of what all the Gedolei Yisrael did. It would appear the best thing would be, the real source would be, to take off the rings in the very beginning, before you make a bracha on the lulav and esrog. However, most people do not do that. Most of the Gedolei Yisrael, and I don't know where, I don't know, go into the fine points of what the reasons are. I don't know. I've never seen that done. I've only seen most people don't take off the rings altogether. They never heard of this minhag. They look at you like you're crazy. Take off the rings. Who told you to take off the rings on Hoshana Rabbah? But I'm telling you, this is legit. It's legit as it gets. This is a real, real minhag to take off the rings. The only question is when to take off the rings. Most of the people that I've grown up with, that I've seen, is they leave the rings on when they make the bracha on the lulav. They leave it on for Hallel, and they take off the rings. What I've seen is for the last hakafa on Hoshana Rabbah. When you walk around the bima on Hoshana Rabbah, the last time, the seventh time, that's when I've seen in the crowd that I hang out with, that's where they take off the ring, the last hakafa. Many Gedolei Yisrael took off the rings before they began Hoshanis, period. Before Hoshanis, they take off the rings. Some of the Gedolei Yisrael would take off the rings before they said Hallel, but they would first make a bracha when the rings were still on, and there are a list of Gedolei Yisrael who had the custom to take off the rings even before they made the bracha on the lulav and esrog. So the bottom line is, there are conflicting minhagim as to when to take off the rings on the lulav, on Hoshana Rabbah, but that's another mystical minhag about Hoshana Rabbah. Okay, the next minhag which everyone knows about is on Hoshana Rabbah, you take aravos and you bang aravos on the ground. This is Divrei Kabbalah. This comes from the prophets, from the Nevi'im. This is not a mitzvah in the Torah. And the Rabbanon have absolutely nothing to do with this mitzvah. This was a mitzvah, either it's a Gemara's a discussion, is it called a minhag, or is it called a takana that was handed down to us from the prophets, from the Nevi'im. Halacha l'maisa, we assume that we accept it not as a command, but as a custom. What would be the difference if this is a custom or a command? The difference would be if we make a baracha. If it's a command, then we, every year, Hoshana Rabbah, before we bang the aravos on the ground, we would make a bracha. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech ha'olam asher kedeshanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu lachvoit ha'aravah. No one does that. That's a bracha levatola, because we accept this custom of taking the aravah and banging on the ground is a minhag from the Nevi'im. And you do not make a bracha, generally speaking, not all the time, but generally you do not make a blessing on minhagim. There are noticeable exceptions. Hallel, chatzi hallel on Rosh Chodesh is a minhag we make a bracha. We light the menorah, the Chanukah menorah in the Beis HaKnesses. That's a minhag we make a bracha, but generally we do not make brachas on minhagim. That's why we do not make a bracha, but this comes from the Nevi'im. We bang the arava on the ground on Hoshana Rabbah. Now here's the question. How many aravos do you need? Me'ikar hadin, according to the letter of the law, you only need one arava. You tell this to the people on the street, they'll kill you because they'll go out of business. Okay, one arava, that's all you need is one arava. The Mishnah Berurah brings down from the Taz The Taz says three Aravos, but the Arizal says five. And that is the Minhag HaOlam. So everyone here is a Mekubal. Everyone here takes five. Who doesn't take five Aravos? I don't know anyone that wouldn't take anything less than five. So everyone that I know has become a Mekubal on Hashanah Rabbah to follow the Arizal, take five Aravos. How many times do you bang the Aravos on the ground? Five times. That's it. Five times. Baal Tosef. No need to bang more than five times. Now, some people, when they bang on the ground, all these things, I can't tell you any reasons because I don't know the reasons. These, all these are Kabbalah, so these are mystical things. How many times do you bang on the ground? Five times. Now, what about bang on a chair? I remember in the young Israel as a child, people didn't bang it on the floor because if you bang on the floor, the leaves are not going to fall off because there's carpet on the floor. So what did they do? They bang it on the chair. And the chair would turn green. And it would be green the whole year, the chair. Is that correct to bang it on, to bang it on the chair? Well, the truth is it says in the Ramah to bang it either on the ground or on a kli, a utensil. A chair is definitely called a utensil. And the minig is that the leaves, the bang it so the leaves should fall off. The Arizal says do not bang it on a utensil. You have to bang it on the earth, on the offer. In order to fulfill the inyone Kabbalah that we're trying to obliterate evil in this world, that's what it's all about somehow, you have to bang it on the earth. The problem is when you bang it on the earth, the leaves don't fall off so well. So what became the custom is to do both. First, you bang it five times on the ground in order to fulfill the inyone Kabbalah of the minhag of the Nevi'im is to eradicate evil by banging it on the ground. And then in order to also fulfill another element in Hashanas, is that the leaves should fall off. It's also, you also bang it on a utensil, on the table or on a chair, in order to knock off a couple of leaves. You don't have to knock off all the leaves. One or two is enough. Sometimes banging on the floor, none of the leaves fall off. So then you bang it on a chair to get one or two leaves to fall off to make sure that the janitor has to earn his job by cleaning up after you, after davening is over, to pick up all the leaves, to sweep up all the leaves, to get off a couple of leaves. So the minhag is do twice. You bang it on the ground five times, and then you bang it a little bit on the chair in order that some of the leaves should fall off. Now, before you bang it, there's another custom, there's another question that says in the Ramah that you're supposed to wave it, to do na'anuim with the Aravos. What does that mean? So there are different extremes of what that means. Some G'dayli Yisrael, before they actually bang the Aravos on the ground, they would shake the Aravos the same way you shake the Dalet Minim. You have the Arava, you're holding the Arava the entire time, you're saying Tana Emunim, and then you do Nanuim in all the directions with the Arava. You take the Arava, you go in all six directions. And after you do all six directions, you then take it and you bang it on the ground five times. And then you bang it on a chair in order that you should dislodge a couple of the leaves. Now that's not everyone, many Gedolim hold that's not what the Ramah means. When the Ramah means that you should nanua, it does not mean the nanuim of the Dalet Minim in all six directions. It means you first shake it. You just shake it a little bit. You shake it. Doesn't mean don't get carried away. You shake it a little bit. And after you shake it, then you bang it on the ground. Some Gedolim say don't even do that. Just bang it on the ground. Don't look for trouble. Now, what happens when you finish? What happens when you finish banging it on the ground? What do you do with the Aravos? So the minhag is to throw it on top of the Aron HaKodesh. Why? Where does that come from? Because in the Beis HaMikdash, after they banged it, what did they do with it? They threw it on the Mizbeach. After they would bang the Aravos on the ground, they threw it on top of the Mizbeach. And the closest thing we have today to the Mizbeach is the Aron HaKodesh. The Aron HaKodesh review to a certain degree, because the Bima is not going to work. You're not going to be able to leave your Aravos in the Bima. So the Aron HaKodesh is considered to be a token fulfillment, a token zecher for the Mizbeach. And just like after they banged it, they threw it on top of the Mizbeach, we take it and we throw it on top of the Aron HaKodesh. And when do you take it down? Well, that depends on when the gabbai in the shul or the cleaning department decides. At Kan, most shuls, they have it there over Hashanah Rabbah. They keep it there. They keep it there for Simchas Torah. They keep their ravas there, at least for Simchas Torah. And some shuls, they leave it there for a couple of weeks. And some shuls, they never take it down. They leave it there the whole year. I don't know, to each his own, to zecher, the chavivus of the mitzvah. He writes something I never saw before here in the sefer, is that I never heard of this minhag. That people, individuals, have a minhag to go to their rebbe or to a tzaddik and to try to get from his hoshanis leaves. And the rebbe bangs with his hoshanis leaves fall off. The chap is like shirayim from the rebbe. The chap some of the leaves.
They sold that from, they gave it out for Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky.
So he writes over here that people, they go to Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky and they chop his leaves, and they ask him for a whole arava. And he gives, you want it here, take a leaf, take this. So they asked him, Rebbe, where does it say this? Never, can't find any source, anywhere in the whole Oitzra Chochma that makes mention of such a minhag to go to a tzaddik and to take from the tzaddik after Shana Rabbah to take home as a souvenir the leaves from his aravas. Where does it come? So Chaim Kanesi says, you're right. I never heard of this. I don't know what this is about. But if it makes someone happy, this fellow comes, he wants a leaf, it'll make him happy, put a smile on his face. Fine with me. I don't have any problem with that. If this is what makes you happy, you want to go take one of the leaves from my arava, gesunte hate, I don't have any makar for this. I don't know what this is, a new mishagas. I don't know what this is all about. But this became a new thing today. Can you imagine advertisement in all the newspapers? Just give a donation. Money, kesef ya'anes akol, if you give a donation, we'll send you in the mail, FedEx, bo bayom, better than Prime. Before Simchas Torah, you'll already have in the mail a leaf from the gadol of your choice. For money, if you give us enough money to the organization, we'll get you a leaf of any Rebbe you want. Isn't that a great, great marketing technique, fundraising? There's absolutely no makar for this. This became something which is a new mishigas. Now, I always thought this was a mishigas, but it seems like it's not so simple. How do you tie? Now, again, the minhag I told you is you only need really one. The Ratah says three. The Arizal says five. How do you tie the five aravos together? So back in the day, in the olden days, they had rubber bands. Remember those days? You know what rubber bands are? They used to have rubber bands. They would tie the aravos, the five aravos, the rubber bands. You go into a store. Before there was something called Amazon. They used to have real stores. You had to physically walk into a building and go look for different things on the shelf. You take things out. Rubber bands, 99 cents. You buy a big box of rubber bands and you wrap up, and they would wrap up all of the aravos. All of a sudden, a couple of years ago, I noticed. No. Rubber bands. It's not Shane. This is not nice. They would take lulav strips, and they would tie it up with lulavim. And then, if you really want to be mahader, you really want to be machmir, lulav is not also right, because this is not a lulav. This is not a rubber. Tie it up with aravos. So they would take a branch. You slice an arava branch. Okay, it's very, very thin, and you make out of arava, you make like little ropes or little strands, and with the arava you tie it up. So it should be tied with its own kind. Now the reason why there is a requirement, it's proper that the five arava should be tied, is because is because it's considered a beautification to take the aravos and to bind them and to tie them up. So the question is, once you're binding it up, if you bind it with a material that's foreign to this item, is that considered to be improper? If you're holding it in your hand, is it called a chatzitza? And the answer is no. It's perfectly fine. There's no question. It's kosher. It's perfectly fine. There's no issue whatsoever. However, you know, business, you're always looking for an edge. You're always looking to get ahead. You're looking to have a product that's more mahudar. So if there are two kids on the table selling you aravos, and one has tied with rubber bands, and the other is tied with a lulav branch, or who are you going to buy? Of course, it's a better product, right? So it became a new thing today that it's very hard, in fact. It's interesting. It's really very difficult to find aravos that are tied with rubber bands, at least the commercially produced, mass-produced rubber bands that come from China and Japan. I'm not talking about the homegrown backyard. People who grow their aravos in the backyard may take out some rubber bands and tie them together. But if you go buy, you know, commercially produced sets of aravos that come from the factories right off the assembly line in Japan, China, or North Korea, they all come now with lulavim branches tying together or other things, because it's considered to be a hiddur.
It's more expensive to buy the rubber band than to buy the aravos.
It is? I don't think so. I doubt it.
The only rubber bands today that are good are the ones that the orthodontists use in the teeth.
Those are good. Yeah, those don't snap. Those don't snap. Those snap also.
Otherwise, who uses small rubber?
They snap also. Those ones that go in your teeth, they also snap. All right, any event, going back, getting serious. Now, it says over here, something which I never saw, is that when you hold it, I don't know, it says that there should be another tefach. I don't know, forget it. You should hold on to the actual branches themselves, not hold on to the part of the branch that has the bond. You should hold on to the part of the branch that does not have the tie. You should hold it directly. Okay, so this is a minug, and some people, you know, people, they take it on people to their wives, and people, I mean, and I know people going to shul today, but when people go to shul, it's very, very common that after you do the Hashanis, and you bang it five times, and you then bang it maybe on a chair to remove some of the leaves, you take it home, and you give it to your wife. And your wife, she bangs it on the ground five times, and she bangs it on a kli. Some people tell me that it's not a good idea to take it home to the wife, because what happens is the wife bangs it on your head. Mayor, does that happen at home, Mayor? Do you take it home, Mayor? Instead of banging on the ground.
I take long ones. The long ones, it's hard to bang. One of the reasons you should hold the aravos higher up, not with side, is because it's easier to knock it off.
It's easier.
If you hold it at the very tip, you don't get enough power into the edges.
To knock it off.
The higher up you hold it, the easier it is to knock it off.
You don't have to knock it off. There's no requirement to knock it off.
The whole idea is to knock off the... There must be a symbolism.
Yeah, there is. The main thing is to bang it on the ground. That's the main thing. The Iker is
you should have an oizge klapta shana.
You bang it on the ground. And then if none of the leaves fall off, so then you can bang it on a chair or table to knock off a couple of leaves. Just knock them all off. One or two is enough. And that's it. And you can recycle it. You can give it to a child. You can give it to someone else. People, there is a minhag. There is a minhag that everyone should do this. And it's very common today that people will take home the aravos and give it to the wife or to their children or to someone to be mekayim, the minhag neviim, to take an arava. You only really need one. And again, if you mahadir three and you want to be more machmir, you can take five. And you tie them up, and to bang it on the ground five times, and to then bang it on the table or a chair one leaf should fall off. This is a kiyum of the minug neviim. These are mystical things that are very, very hard to really grasp the depth of what it's about. I mean, the basic ideas that you're going to hear about, you're going to read about, is that the arav represents a rasha, and you want to You want to, it's a violent act. You want to take the Rasha and give him a zetz and either knock him out or set him straight. I don't know, today we're not in a generation where we are promoting violence. It's difficult enough for us to appreciate what we say on Pesach, Shefoich Chamoscha El HaGoy Mashalo Yidu'ucha. So you say some words, you curse them, they deserve to be cursed. They tortured us, they killed us, they murdered us. But you don't find in our mitzvahs that we take action, that we go and we do acts of violence. So it's a very interesting idea, is to say that taking the arava and banging it, which is a violent act, to cause the leaves to fall off, it's something which is a very dangerous game. I see my niece over here. This is logging on over here, on the bottom over here, Esther Mitzner. She's logging on over here from Boston. But this is it's not something over here which is it's surprising that we would promote such behavior. And it definitely requires explanation, and it's hard to find satisfying reasons to we just do it as this is the tradition. It was sanctioned by the prophets going back 2,500 years ago, and it's an ancient tradition, and it's something that we don't take lightly. Now, there's another very fascinating minhag to be done on Hashanah Rabbah. And that is women who are pregnant, they are given the esrog, and they bite off the pitum. The Chayei Adam cites this minhag. Rabbi Maievsky's Yichus, our own Rabbi Maievsky, he's here on the phone, iPhone Maievsky, his Zayde, he comes from the Chayei Adam, and the Chayei Adam mentions this minhag. And the Chayei Adam mentions the minhag. It's not something we play around with. What is it all about? Who knows? Whatever it means, a woman who is pregnant is given an esrog, and she bites off the pitum and she spits out the pitum. Okay, what that means, I have no idea. But that's something which you're going to see in all of the various minhagim. Okay, what other minhagim? There's another minhag, is to eat kreplach.
There's a meaning about biting off the pitum.
There's a what?
There's a meaning behind it.
What's the meaning?
If the esrog was from the Eitz Hadas,
yeah.
The only reason women suffer chevle leida is because Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas.
Okay, very good.
Demonstrate that we wouldn't have eaten from the Eitz Hadas.
The women are
and
showing.
The right. Is, now we're showing you, just giving a bite.
Spit out. We spit it out. Very good. Mary is saying a reason that the women who are pregnant, they suffer chevlele. That was the curse that the Hashem gave the Isha for the chait of the Eitz Hadas is the pain of childbirth. And there's an opinion that says that the Eitz Hadas was an esrog. It's not. That's not in the Gemara. The Gemara says it was a chita. It's a medrash. It was an esrog. So in order the woman should not suffer chevle leida, have an easy childbirth, she undoes the chait of the Eitz Hadas. Instead of eating from the Eitz Hadas, she does an act to show that she has charota, that she ate from the Eitz Hadas by biting the esrog and spitting it out. So that's a very interesting idea. Okay, so now what else? There's a minig to eat kreplach. Okay, everyone knows the vart. You eat kreplach 3 times a year whenever you clap on Purim, when you clap Haman, on Erev Yom Kippur, when they clap Malga. I saw this year for the first time. I never saw my whole life. This year was new for me. I saw in Shul Rabbi Schmidman. I daven Rabbi Schmidman very often, and I saw the Gabbai was giving Rabbi Schmidman Malkos. After Mincha, he called over the Gabbai, Ephraim Fruchthandler is the Gabbai, and he had gave him the garotel, and he bent down, and he took the garotel, and he was whipping the rabbi 39 times. And each line, and he said the Vuhu Racham, Vuhu Rachum. And he alternated the two sides of his shoulder with the garatol. Vuhu Rachum Yichaper Avon Velo Yashchis Verbo Lashiva Po. He did it three times. He said there are 13 words. There are 13 words in the pasuk Vuhu Rachum. And you do it three times. That's how they did it in Bezdin. That's how they did it. They whipped a person with a whip, a real whip. B'chol koich in Bezdin, they whipped the person. They first of all they stripped him naked, and they had a whip made from an eagle, and it was a large whip, and leather hurts, and the Gavai Bezdin would be instructed to whip the person b'chol koich, it's full force. And the person would be tied down or would lie down, and they whipped him, and the whipping was so strong that some people died, and they had to have a doctor to evaluate if the person is going to die from the intensity. So there is a minhag that Erev Yom Kippur, people subject themselves to a symbolic malchus. They don't take off your shirt. You bend over, and they use, in this case, I saw him use his garatel. I tapped him. He tapped him 39 times when he said Vuhu Rachum. And the rabbi, he was saying something. He was saying Tehillim, he was saying Hiratzon, he was saying Vidui. I found it very interesting. This is a minig I've seen written writing many, many times. I've never actually seen it done for real. And this year I saw it for the first time. Maybe they should have done it to me, Mayor. Okay. There's a saying. A tulum strap. Gartel is nothing. It's garnished. So there's a minhag. There's a saying that whenever you clap, that's when you eat what's called kreplach. What's kreplach? There is something hidden, something. Meat is hiding. There's good. Ein simcha ella bebasar, and the basar is hiding inside of the dough. When is there something waiting for you? When you clap. When do you clap? Three times you clap. You clap Hashanis, you clap Haman, and you clap Malkois Erev Yom Kippur. So there's a minig in the sukkah to eat an Erev Yom and Hashanah Rabbah kreplach. Okay, so I think I've told you all the minhagim that I know. There are probably more minhagim. Oh, there's another minig. It's to blow shofar. Anyone blow shofar in your shul in Hashanah Rabbah? There are some shuls they blow shofar in between each one of the hakafas. They blow tekiyas, or they blow a set of tekiyas in between each another unique minig. And of course, the other minhagim is that we daven the nusach kemat of Shabbos. You daven psukei de zimra of Shabbos. But you have to say mizmor l'soida. Don't forget to say mizmor l'soida. But we do not say nishmas. Nishmas is omitted. And in the kedusha, we say the kedusha of Shmona Esrei of Musaf, we say the kedusha of Shabbos. You say Keser, you say the whole long nus, the Kedusha that you would ordinarily say if it was Shabbos. And when you take out the Sefer Torah, you say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and you say Kadosh Vinoira Shemoi. So we embellish the davening as if it was the Yomim Noiroim, as if it was Shabbos or Yom Tov to a certain degree. The Shatz who davens Musaf, he wears the minigus, he wears a kittel. What other unique minhagim? Okay, that's all I can remember. But I think we've gone through pretty much all of the minhagim that I am aware of. Okay, so let's review very quickly the minhagim. Number one, at night, it's either going to be Tehillim, it's the Ushpizn of David, Tehillim, or the Musar of Moshe Rabbeinu, of Mishneh Torah. By day, The minhag is you're supposed to wake up a little bit early. It's one of the days of the year when you're supposed to wake up a bit earlier. The davening is a davening that is very similar to Shabbos and Yom Tov with Psuga de Zimra and Kadosh Venera Shemoy, the Kedusha in the davening. We blow. I'm sorry? We blow shofar. Some have the minute to blow shofar at some point in time during davening. Okay, there are many different minhagim have long shofar. The nanuim we mentioned is that the minig is to remove the rings at some point during the davening. We remove the rings from the lulav only. And then a su'ud, there's a minog, there's no obligation, but there's a minog to have a chosh of a meal, a real su'udas yomtov on Hashana Rabba, light candles, to sit down to a real meal. We wash and you bench. Oh, there's another minog I forgot to tell you, and that's really not in the chustar, it's a little different. Get to remove the rings. Okay, what else do we mention? Okay, not to forget about the chivut arava. Is to bang the arava on the ground 5 times. The minig is to have 5 aravas, to tie them together, to bang them on the ground, and 5 times. And if none of the leaves fall off, then you bang it on a chair to remove some of the leaves. There are different customs. If a person should first wave the arava a little bit, either wave it just a little bit. Some have an extreme minig to shake the arava the same way you shake the lulav, the dalid. Minim, and then before you bang, and then to take it and to throw it on top of the Aron HaKodesh, just like in the Beis HaMikdash, after they finish banging the Arava on the ground, they would throw the Arava on top of the Mizbeach. These are all very beautiful menhagim, and it depends where you daven. Some shuls, they really live it up. They really they soak it all in. And some shuls, unfortunately, They make light of it. I remember someone told me this year, he told me that he never worked. This person's retired, doesn't work anymore. And he told me he never ever worked in Chol HaMoed. He was not by any means a wealthy person. He struggled, it seems. Whenever he had a parnasa, he worked hard. And he was always able, always very makbid in Chol HaMoed, not to work. It was one exception. He got a new job, and he had to come and daven on Hashana Rabbah. And that was the first time he told us, it was very spooky what he said to me. It was the first time he decided that he just has to go. He has to make parnasa. He got a new job, and he didn't want to jeopardize his parnasa, so he decided he's going to go to work on Hashana Rabbah. Okay? Many people go to work. Big deal, right? But he never did it before. It bothered him a lot. And Hashana Rabbah is a very long davening. He got up very, very early. He went to a minyan. He knows they daven very, very early. And he told me he brought his kids. He's taking his kids every day to do davening. Chol HaMoed took his kids to this minyan. And that day he davened Hashana Rabbah, the Sefer Torah fell on the floor. During the davening on Hashana Rabbah, they dropped the Sefer Torah. And it was a big deal. And they had a fast, not then, after Yom Tov. And it haunts him. He told me, Ad Hayom Hazeh, that he never worked on Chol HaMoed. And that year, he decided he cannot jeopardize his parnasa. He has to work. And he's right. No one's gonna tell him he did anything wrong. But it just haunts him. He went early to a special early minyan so he can be at work on time, and punt, that minyan that he went to, this terrible thing happened, that the Sefer Torah fell on the floor. Yeah, and I saw he was telling this to me. It haunts him. This happened probably 30 years ago, but it haunts him. Ad Hayom Hazeh. Some people, they take Hashana Rabbah, you know, they live it up. There's another minig that it says in the Ramah that we mentioned that we started with saying in the Ramah that the night of Hashana Rabbah, to go out and to see if you can see your shadow in the moonlight. And everyone says, don't even think about trying this, because we don't know what in the world this means. What is a shadow? What is the simin? What does it mean? But obviously Hashana Rabbah captures these very, very mystical things. Okay, before we started, and I think I see a lot of people came late, we read through a piece from the Sefer, from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, who explained something very fascinating about Hashanah Rabbah. But okay, we'll leave that before. I just want to tell you one thing before I want to finish off with two short things. I'll tell you a very short vart. I just want to just make a ha'ara, which really spooks me out very much this year. This year, many shuls are not allowing people to do hashanas, to walk around the bima. In many, many shuls, the rule is it's a sakana. There is a sakana, there's an uptick, it's dangerous. The only one who walks around the bima is the shliach tzibur. It spooks me out. Why? Because the halacha is, there's a very big dilemma if an ovel, a person in mourning, is allowed to take a hakafa. And there are many minhagim. It's nogeh simchas Torah, and it's nogeh hashanis. It's probably much, much more common that an ovel does not walk around the bima with the dalid minim for hashanis. In a regular year, in the past, when there were no issues, and if Rachman al-Islan, a person was an ovel, so the minig was, you're an ovel. An ovel, not everywhere, again, there are minhagim, different minhagim, but many communities, you're an ovel. An ovel does not take the dalid minim and walk around the bima, around the Sefer Torah. And in fact, what the minig in many places is the avelim are the ones who are given the Sefer Torah to hold. You take the Sefer Torah, you hold the Sefer Torah by the bima, because you cannot walk around, you hold the Sefer Torah. I remember when I was in Chaim Berlin, I was in Ovel twice, both my parents. So there, you should know that there, there's no minhag, do whatever you want. And there in Chaim Berlin, their whole approach to Avelos is that on Yom Tov they don't really hold of Avelos. I don't know, there's no minhag, do whatever you want. But if you'll ask someone, they'll say, you want to walk around, gesunde hate, walk around, it's no problem. Here we're not so makbid on this. Just because you're an Ovel, you can take the dalid minim and you can walk around. But if you want, hold the Sefer Torah. Problem was, when there are so many people, I remember when I was there, there were like 3-4 Avelim. So you have to wait online, you know, you gotta alternate, or you take turns at the same time. The Avelim there would hold the Sefer Torah. They would take turns holding the Sefer Torah because the Avelim would not walk around. Even though really you can't walk around, it's not the end of the world. Simchas Torah, what do? I think many Rabbanim will tell you that you can walk around once. Get a hakafa on Simchas Torah, you walk around the bima once. But other Rabbanim will tell you, you're an Ovel. An Ovel doesn't take a hakafa. You don't walk around the bima with the Sefer Torah, and you don't walk Hashanis. This year, it's very disturbing to me to see all these emails flying around from all the different shuls where the rabbis have decreed it's a sakana and there is no, and there are going to be no hakafas. Basically, what are they saying? We're all in Avelos. This year, Klal Yisrael is in Avelos. And I think that's what we should be thinking. If you daven in a shul, where they tell you, you're not walking around, no one's walking around here. Don't spread your germs. Stay put. So you know what? To me, they're saying to me, you're an ovel. This year, I read in print.
It's worth the saying you're dead. Not saying you're not.
No, you're saying you're an ovel. You're not dead. You're alive. You're in Avelos. Okay, they write up in the newspapers and from the Frum publications. Clearly, they have the numbers. Over 1,000 Shomrei Torah mitzvahs from our community here, even just in New York, New Jersey, have passed away. And that number probably is probably double that number. So that's right. We're all in Avelos. And when they tell us this year, you're not walking around, don't look at not walking around as a statement, oh, no, it's sakana. Min HaShemayim, they're telling us, don't walk around. You don't deserve to walk around. You're all Avelim. Don't forget how many people died. Don't forget about them. It's very disturbing. People just forget. One, two, they forgot. You know, people died. How many good people died, but way before their time? We're all in Avelus. And that's why we're not given the zuchus this year to do hakafas the way we should and to do hoshanas the way we should. The way we should look at the rules that are being handed down to us by the Rabbanim should be accepted in a productive way, acknowledging that Klal Yisrael is in Avelus. And you know, it's Yom Tov, obviously, v'samachta b'chagecha v'hayisa achsame. That's really started all shit. This combination of having both simcha, but yet acknowledging the Yom Hadin on Hashanah Rabbah, that really is with us during the entire Yom Tov of Sukkot this year, and there's no place that it's more expressed and brought out in front of our eyes than during Hakafas and Hashanahs. Whether you're davening in a shul where they let you do Hakafas or they don't let you do Hakafas. A lot of shuls, unfortunately, there's so few people in the shul. No big deal if they do Hakafas. I daven on Shabbos. They did Hakafas. It wasn't like a big deal. But all the emails that I've read, when I was doing Hakafas, I was thinking about all the emails of all the shuls where the Rabbanim said, no. Not on my achrayas. No one's taking the Dalet Amos. I davened in Chaim Berlin this morning, and there was I davened in the vicinity of a very, very big Talmud Chacham. A very Talmud Chacham who's not a young man, and he was wearing a mask, everything. He was sitting in an isolated area.
You see how my body and, is an L?
And when it came Hoshanis, he walked out. He left. He left for Hoshanis. Like before they started Hoshanis, he just went home, because obviously. Obviously, it's a sakana, and you know, it's not a simple matter. And when you look at that, we're not Avelus. It's not simple. All right, let me conclude with just a short idea, and that is, every day of Sukkot, Chazal have given us 7 days of Sukkot, 7 days, and the 7 days correspond to the Ushpizin, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. And we spent today discussing very much David. The seventh day of Sukkot, the last day, is David. What do the 7 days, why did Chazal do this? Why do they match up 7 individuals to the 7 days of Sukkot? So I want to suggest something very simple. And that is, a sukkah is a structure. It's a building. It's a dwelling. The 7 ushpizin that Chazal have selected. No, you can pick out of the box, out of the hat, hundreds of people. Why only Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, David, and Yosef? What about Pinchas? What about? All of the Shvatim, all of the Shiftei Kah, what about Bezalel? What about, the list goes on, you take out the Ishei HaTanach. Why specifically did Chazal match up these 7 people to the 7 days of Sukkot? And I want to suggest something very simple. These 7 people were old builders. They built structures. Avraham built an Eshel. Yitzchak, he built wells. Alkein Korol Amokim Ahu Rechoivais. He built a city called Rechoivais. When he dug wells and he called those wells Rechoivais. Yaakov, it says, he built for himself a sukkah. Ulimekneu osa sukkahs. Yosef built a community, a yishuv in Golos. He built a place, he built a mokoim for Klal Yisrael to reside. He set up an environment for Klal Yisrael to reside in Golos. Moshe, he built the Mishkan. Aaron, he built the Jewish home. Ohev Shalom, the Roidev Shalom. David, that's the problem. David wanted to build the permanent structure for Hashem to rest his Shechina, but he didn't finish. He only built the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash. And because he only built the foundation, did not build the structure, there was a weakness inherent in its structure, which allowed it to be destroyed, and was ultimately, which allowed it to be destroyed, which only was fully built, will come with the Bayis Shlish. Let's review. Each day, Chazal are telling us, go into your sukkah, into your structure, and connect this structure to a structure that was established by one of our ancestors. Avraham built something. Vayita Eshel. He built an Eshel, a place where he brought people Achila Shesia Levoya. He built a hotel. He built a place to bring people Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. Yitzchok, he built something. Now, you have to really analyze what he built, but he built a mokoim where you could have water. He built wells, but it appears from the Chazal, he didn't just build wells, he built structures where these are places where water can be, you can be shoyev mayim, hoy kol tzomei l'chu l'mayim. Yaakov ulimikneu osa sukais, he built a yeshiva. Why do I say that? Because the terminology Chazal used to describe the relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud, a leader and his followers, is sheep. V'lo yeh adas Hashem katzoin asher ein lohem royeh. People need leaders. Ulemikneu osa sukkah is, he built a yeshiva. A sukkah is a place for the tzoin. And Yaakov was the royeh. The Roya is the leader to guide his people. A yeshiva is a sukkah, is like a yeshiva, a place to gain from a leader. Again, going back to Moshe, he built the Mishkan. Aaron, he built Sholem Bayis. He built the Jewish home. Yosef, he built a dwelling for Klal Yisrael in Golos. David tried to build the permanent dwelling for Klal Yisrael, for Hashem's presence in this world, but David did not succeed. David was only able to build the foundation. Hoshana Rabbah, there's a lot going on Hoshana Rabbah, a lot of activity. You walk around the Bima 7 times. We do all of these things on Hoshana Rabbah. You know why? Because we're trying to finish up the job of David. David, he started a construction project, but unlike all of his predecessors of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, and Yosef, he didn't finish it. He was unable to succeed in completing the job. He left that for us. And that's why in Hoshana Rabbah, we have to hustle. Hoshana Rabbah involves so much more effort to complete the mission of David and once again bring for Hashem a permanent dwelling where he can rest his divine presence. Abba Yisrael, thank you so much for the Kiddush Hashem. So many Pashto people came here to learn today on Chol HaMoed. Incredible. I'm overwhelmed. All these Pashto people. And the Yom Tov should bring you all blessing. Incredible blessing to you and your families. A year of nachas and
Larry,
good health.
Larry, did you have the bris yet?
Success.
Larry had a grandson.
Larry had a grandson, Mazel Tov.
Asher, you there? All right. Mercher for Winsgesucht.
Heshi, where? Heshi, Barth?
Barth, yeah. I think so. I sort of noticed in the TV views.
Okay, Rabbi, so have a wonderful day, a wonderful Moed.
Okay.
Be well.
I thought there was another minute that even women used to go to Hashanah Rabbah, you know?
They do. And Chaim Berlin is packed. Women's section is packed.
Right. That's the one Yom Tov where the women actually, besides Yom Kippur.
They go? No one ever went. In the Young Israel, no one ever went. There was never a woman in Hashanah Rabbah. In the small shuls, women don't go.
Maybe they did in the beginning. You don't know.
I don't remember. And I remember those days. There was no women in the Young Israel those days. Chaim Berlin, it's full.
I remember that in the shuls, you always had women on Hashanah Rabbah.
Could be. Hashanah Rabbah is a very beautiful day. It's a very beautiful, it's all you make out of it. Like everything in life, it's all what you make out of it.
I just figured it out.
Yeah.
Women go to shul on Purim and Hashanah Rabbah and Yom Kippur because they go to see if even club.
Mary, you have a one-track mind.
Thank you. Thank you. Tomorrow you're planning to have
I'm going to try. We'll try. Mir Tashem, believe me. Yeah, we'll try. Mir Tashem. Same time, 10:30. I go to Chaim Berlin and Chol HaMoed. I like davening this, so I can't really get here until 10:30. They daven very slow. They start late. They start at 8 o'clock. Schlep a little bit. They have a break.
No, you can continue past 12 o'clock. No one says you have to stop at 12.
All right, people. It's good. 12 o'clock is good.
Anyway, okay. We have representation here from Philadelphia, Rabbi Dr. Cohen, and from Canada, we have Norman Forst, right?
Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem.
And then we have Hashi Glad, hasn't been there in quite a while. How you doing, Hashi?
Mr. Gladder, how are you?
It's Mr. and Mrs. Gladder.
Mr. and Mrs. Gladder, yes. So, Med, you
how
go to shul?
Is doing?
I met him. I met him like a couple of weeks ago. He was Baruch Hashem. He was totally fine, as far as I saw. He was totally back to himself, 100%. Baruch Hashem.
Okay.
Baruch Hashem had a full recovery. Baruch Hashem. So, how is your Yom Tov, Mary? You go to shul? What
no,
you do?
Just for mincha I went tonight.
Would you go?
And one day, one guy showed up without a mask.
Oh, they were all screaming, Lebedik? Yeah.
Yeah, but he right away, at the end of davening, he made an announcement that he apologizes to people.
Wow.
But he didn't realize it. He davens in that shul. He's the gabbai in the shul.
Wow.
And Pinchas Frankel says that there's no mask. He almost insists that no mask.
Okay.
So he didn't realize that this mincha was a separate minion.
To each his own.
And my daughter called me up. She said, "Don't go to mincha. You don't need. It's not worth it. If it's coming back, you
That's
don't
right.
know where it's coming back."
That's right. A lot of people are very scared.
Satma has one of the top guys in Satma, wrestler. He's been intubated.
Yeah. Rabbi Spiro in our neighborhood, he's a tremendous posek. He's intubated. He's been intubated, hello?
What is it?
Sorry, I got cut off.
I don't see you around the corner, I said. This is Mayor Appeldorf. How are you?
I got cut off here, sorry.
We're in the backyard.
Yeah? ambulance went down 20. Did you see that?
Can I give you a job, Mayor?
To fix your gate?
No. Get me an Arava for a Shannon Arava.
How many Aravas you need? One or five?
One.
The rabbi said one.
One, come to my front lawn and cut it off yourself.
No.
I don't know where you live.
870 East 27th. Next, right before the Alapal Yeshiva.
What are you
come
using for
and cut off any one or other you want.
What are you using?
What?
From his yard.
Are you using five?
I use five, but there's enough for you to take one. You
can you make me one for five?
I'm not going to bring you one. Why should I bring you one?
Because call I'm brother. No, it's our brother.
Call up Yarmish. Yarmish deals in it. You know Yarmish?
Always do that from him, yeah.
He's professional. He gives you with the, with the rubber band, or he ties it down.
No,
A guy rang my bell 2 minutes before Shabbos on Friday. The kid is standing in front of my door without a mask. We had a mistake. We didn't get our rubbers. So I said, what do you want? He said, I need a rubbers. I said, how many do you need? He said, I need for three lulavim. I said, I'll only give you for one lulav. Take for one lulav. I don't have to. But the next morning, I went across the street, not next morning, because of Shabbos, the Sunday morning, I went across the street and I said, listen, I had put aside for myself Erev Yontif two Aravis. I don't need him because my Aravis are fine. You want to have him? He says, my father's still sleeping. So I said, tell him to come across. He sends me a son, again without a mask. I told him, if you tell your father to come. She sends a son-in-law who's a little with a towel. So I said, why aren't you wearing a mask? Yeah. I said, you know, if your father-in-law wants it, let him come and get it. You never can.
Mm-hmm. That's a bad block you live on.
What?
It's not a good block.
Well, I have the yeshiva and they don't wear masks, but but
you know, probably the big fear is that it'll spread from the religious neighborhoods to the adjacent neighborhood, and then